Thank you for inviting me to this, and I do have a lot of people that I'm collaborating with, and I'll acknowledge those at the end of the presentation. I wanted to start with the agroecosystem sustainability part of my title, and start with the statement that soil health is a fundamental part of this sustainability goal. And I put it soil healthy because, as we all know, we have some issues with identifying exactly what that is. However, there is a lot of interest currently, and it is mobilizing producer communities to in efforts to try to kind of promote this, including the Soil Conservation Council of Canada, who launched this past summer the Soil Your Undies campaign. Did anybody hear about that? I guess you have to be in Canada for that, for that excitement. So I'm not making it up. It's basically this idea that if you bury cotton underwear, and it has to be a particular one, apparently Stanfield, after 2 months, some of them may look something like this. And yesterday over dinner, we actually had a discussion, this is, I'm digressing, but that we don't actually know what's happening here, and some colleagues are analyzing what microbial communities are on the underwear or what's left to try to determine this. But one of the things that seems to happen, although it's not always the case, that if you bury them in something like a diverse rotation versus a non-diverse rotation, you get big differences, and that's the idea that farmers do that and then see, you know, these differences and try to then adopt practices that make their soils more biologically active. I will get to the nitrogen part in a minute. So what are some of the things that we tell farmers to do to keep the soil healthy? And increasing crop diversity is one, keeping the soil covered year-round, keeping living roots in the soil, basically adding organic matter that doesn't get removed as harvest, and minimizing soil disturbance. So we've initiated a series of projects or program basically looking at some questions related to this. One, the first one is, are they actually beneficial for air and water quality? And are there some trade-offs between soil, water, and air quality when you implement diverse cropping rotations? And we are focusing on carbon and nitrogen cycle. And then what's the effect of winter warming on nutrient losses? So where we are, a lot of the losses occur during the non-growing season with freezing and thawing, and we're really interested in that. And the diagram at the bottom here just shows some of the aspects that we're looking at. On the right side, you see a picture of what some of these diverse systems can look like, basically perennializing annual systems by growing cover crops within the rows, as well as after harvest. And on the left side, a conventional rotation with soybean corn. So with this background then, we initiated or installed a long-term soil lysimeter facility to address these questions last year in Ellora, which is the same site where the micromass measurements were done in the past two presentations. And what typically soil lysimeters, the focus is on water quality or water budget. So we're trying to combine this with studies that look at greenhouse gas emissions, but also microbial communities and so on, as the previous slide showed. So the facility was installed last summer, and it consists of 18 large soil weighing lysimeters in sets of three sets of six, as shown here in the picture. And half of the soil types, so nine lysimeters are of a silt loam and nine of a sandy loam. They are undisturbed cores, and the next series of slides will show you like how they were installed, and then I'll give you a bit of preliminary data on that we've collected. So basically, they were installed by MITRE, former UMS, in partnership with Hoskins Scientific Canada. And it starts off with placing this large steel drum, basically, with an open bottom on the surface of the soil and excavating around it carefully down to a depth of about 30 centimeters, so that what is left of soil to push through is quite small. And then it slowly, this hydrological system shown, hydraulic system shown in the middle, pushes that core in, and then the excavation continues, pushes it in a bit more. So basically it took about a day to do one of the cores. This was done off-site, and then the picture on the right shows where they are installed. There was some excavation and concrete receptacles basically installed, which collect, so you can, what you remember from the previous picture that showed the three sets of six, that's what you see here underground now. The three lysimeters on one side, three on the other, and in the middle, the service well, and they are connected underground with piping where all the instrument, the cabling of instrumentation goes through. Before installing it at the site, the cores were turned upside down, and these ceramic cups and soil tensiometers were installed. So the nice thing about these systems is that the lower boundary is controlled to match what is happening in the field, in so by sensors placed at a same depth, at 1.5 meters in the field. So when the sensors in the lysimeter tell, oh, there's more water here than outside of the lysimeter, water gets pumped out, and if there's vice versa, water gets pumped in. So after installation and covering and tightening screws of a plate over this, although we did find out that some of the screws on one of them weren't tightened enough, we had leaks, so things had to be taken out again and fixed, but that's part of it, right? So a number of sensors, I have a slide that show you, gives you a list of what those are in a bit, but so a number of sensors were installed at different depths. And then you can see the cabling coming out of them, and then they were installed or transported and installed in these concrete wells, and they're hanging on three points on load cells, so they're weighing lysimeters. We can push them a bit now to see that they're actually freely weighing. And in on your left, you can see that this collar, a fiberglass collar, was inserted to cover the space, and then the soil was put back so that what we see is just the top of the ring. And last year, we planted soybeans in the area, and these couple of pictures show you a view of the service well, where all the equipment is, as well as drainage tanks that get weighed so that we know what is the amount of water that's coming of each lysimeter. So in winter conditions, I do have a little movie that I couldn't make to work, so I just took snapshots of that. In winter conditions, we get snow, obviously, and then snow bridges can form. So the system has what's called a snow shaker that moves the lysimeter around to break that snow bridge, and you can see that here. So the movie actually shows the whole thing shaking like that. Okay, so the measurements at five depths, soil water content, matrix potential, temperature, their gas lances for automatic CO2 analysis, but also for some manual sampling. So soil solution, so we have been taking samples that then get analyzed with chemical analysis off-site. And then, of course, the weight of the lysimeter of the drainage tanks and the soil gas fluxes. So I'm probably almost running out of time. No? Okay. So the soil gas chambers, you can see two of them on the top left. They are connected to TGA analyzer, the same that was used in the previous studies, and through a sampling system. So we've set it up so that at any one time, three chambers are closed, one in each nest. And the way this works, here's where high frequency data is actually quite advantageous for this type of measurement, because we can switch back and forth between the three chambers while they're closed and get the measurements, and then derive the fit the curve to get the flux. So this is done continuously through all the nests, but with three of them closed at a time. So the experimental setup is, as I already said, two soil types, and I started off with a diverse cropping system because this is where it comes together. We're actually looking at an annual crop versus a diverse perennialized annual cropping system. And we do have, we will install this winter, some winter warming on some of the cores. So ending up with three replicates for each treatment. So the rotations, so last year the whole area was covered in soybeans as kind of a baseline. This spring it looked like this. So we had some soybeans for our non-diverse rotation, and then wheat for the diverse rotation. And now in late summer it looked like this, where we planted a mixture of cover crops, which was fertilized. So this is, we won't be able to compare this on a year-by-year basis. It is a long-term rotation that we would like to see, sort of the net effect of those two. So I'm going to show you just quickly some preliminary data. Basically, right now we're just asserting ourselves that everything is working as it should. So this is the precipitation recorded by the lysimeter. So when a weight increases due to rainfall, that gets recorded. And in comparison, like the blue line is what was measured at our weather station. And this is just all the loam and all the sand plotted together. Data for 2016 from August to January. Over the same period, the evapotranspiration, we can see a bit of a separation between loam and sand. And for the drainage data, I just wanted to point out that we will be concentrating on these events. So last December, we had a period of cold weather and then followed by a thaw at the end of the year. So I have the in blue the air temperature, and then blown up at the bottom. So the increase in air temperature resulted in a leaching event in four of the lysimeters, but not in the other ones. So again, we're digging through mountains of data to try to understand those. But during these periods, we will be getting the nitrogen concentration to derive leaching. And then just quickly, I wanted to give you some idea of our chamber data. The typical variability in space in terms of the three replicates for the loam soil. And then here, over beginning of July of this year to mid-July, we can see, as expected, the loam soil at the start, when there's a bit more moisture, it having higher emissions, and then everything just going to very low values as the soil dried out. We had a period of very low rainfall. And then in August, for a period in August, we see that the loam and the diverse rotation, loam and sand diverse rotation, behaving quite similarly with increased emissions. Well, that wasn't unexpected, because we applied 50 kilograms of N for that cover crop to establish. So right now the diverse rotation isn't looking very good for N2O, but that's because within the we will be obviously measuring for a longer period of time. And with that, I want to conclude just some points here that we have had some operational problems. I haven't gotten to all of those, but The facility will be used to detect these differences between cropping systems, and we are taking a multidisciplinary approach. So I'll get into my acknowledgements and a number of funders. I'm actually not sure why I listed Hoskin and Meter as funders, because actually they were paid, so they should be thanking me. but no, they were good. And then a range of collaborators and a big research team, and I'll finish with this. We love Sonic's cakes and Halloween Sonic CSAT. You can't see it there, but anyway, thank you very much.
We have time for a question or two.
Yeah.
Hi, John.
So you obtain the soil elsewhere and move it into that field?
Yes, yeah.
And so it differs from the surrounding soil?
One of the loam soil site is the same location, but it was taken like a kilometer from the site. And the sand, yes, that's very different.
And the depth of
Oh, right, I didn't mention that. So that's 1.5 meters deep. Yeah.
Not a question, just a comment. Did you notice in the schematics that that's actually replicated? So not only do you bring a piece of soil in from somewhere else, but you replicated that. That was a tremendous amount of work. The video that you did have on the tour was tremendous to show the construction.
Yeah, it was a big, and this is what, and my thing, like I was really nervous about the whole installation, thinking, okay, if things go wrong, because you know, if you hit a rock, then you have to start again, the weather was perfect, everything worked perfect. So then it was installed, and I was like, but actually, that's when the work began for me. And we're still like we're getting there, but I was hoping to actually present more data, but it's just getting through and having students starting with all this work. Anyway, so stay tuned.
So
yeah, actually there was one at the back. Yeah.
What's the expected lifetime of the system, and how does maintenance costs spread out across that line?
That was my question too.
Yeah. So the expected lifetime, I actually don't have an exact number from the manufacturer, but I mean, there are things that we need to replace yearly, like pumps and so on. And right now, I don't have a good handle on the costs because we're still kind of doing that. But I have about altogether, we got a number of projects because people are all excited about it. And so right now, I have about $300,000 per year. It's not costing that, but that's to run everything and grad students and so on. My concern is a bit that once the novelty wears off, we have to keep it going, right? So I'm hoping, I'm going around circles here, but I'm hoping that we will run this for at least 10 years the same way to me the exciting part is to be able to detect the dynamics of potential changes that will happen as we have the ground covered for a longer period of time.
I was wondering if you're optimistic about being able to study the full sort of balance of nitrogen, looking at all the inputs, all the outputs, and so forth. I mean, it seems like that would be a multi-year endeavor with this setup, but I wondered if you're optimistic about that.
I think at first what we're focusing on is just getting sort of the impact, so the nitrate and N2O emissions. That's what our main projects right now are, but it is a site, and it's kind of an invitation also to the community. And I did have a few discussions with Eric on like using of stable isotopes, for example, at the site, or a natural stable isotopes to get at the total N balance is potentially possible. But right now we're just trying to get it all going. But in theory, I mean, many people could be doing work at the same site, right? As long as they're interested in diverse and non-diverse rotations, I guess. And I should, since it's one of the things we would like to do is then adjust the nitrogen rate in the diverse rotation, because the idea is if you have you know, biomass and you're improving mineralization and so on, that you don't need as much fertilizer. This is what some of the producers are seeing. So we will adjust it downwards, but that will come in a few years.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.